You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show
on Seattle Sports Station.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Are you ready for a good game?
Yeah, what'd you guys think of Jerry DePoto there? It is amazing how, kind of like Pete Carroll. Sometimes when things feel at their most dire, when things feel the most negative, talking to both of them has made me feel better on any number of occasions. And sometimes that means that they're destined for success moving forward, and sometimes it doesn't. But I think both have a pretty good job. In Pete's case, just the endless optimism. And in Jerry's, I think a very pragmatic approach to the way he does everything. And I do feel a little bit better about the direction of the team after talking to him and hearing some of his view on why they are where they are and what it should mean moving forward. And by the way, I need some good news as I watch Jordan Spieth fall apart already at the PGA Championship
just the day after.
I said he would win that thing. So, all right.
It's okay. He's going to win, though, right?
Well, I don't know that I feel exactly that way at the moment.
How many holes in is he?
But you said.
He's just done with his first nine. He's two over after nine. So, yeah, it's not been his day. So far, he's made some tough decisions.
Well, I was told he was going to win this tournament.
You know, Justin, we're moving on because we're talking about Jerry DePoto. Sorry. So in talking to Jerry, you can start to feel better. And he has a unique way of using a couple of stats, a couple of things to try to push you in that direction. I thought this answer spoke to it very well.
Our process has us roughly ranked in the top five or six teams in our league in almost every category. The result is that our run production is closer to 11th or 12th. And that's largely attributable to the fact that we're hitting a buck 80 with runners in scoring position. And that's what history tells you is unsustainably low. At some point, we will start to find the ground ball to the right side, the sack fly, or the big hit that scores the run. And then it'll start coming in droves.
Yeah, unsustainably low. That's not a phrase you hear very often. More, you're just pointing out usually unsustainable is something that's high and is probably going to come back down to earth. But in this case, it's sort of the opposite. It's something that's low, and he's got enough good hitters who are hitting better than that in general. This is kind of what we were talking about earlier this morning, right? That some of these things are bad luck. Some of them are bad timing. That some of it is just the chips falling where they are, where a good hitter, somebody who's hitting 250, for instance, is hitting 120 in a clutch situation, that is unlikely to continue. And so I think Jerry knows that, and he spoke a little bit about some of the challenges with trying to deal with the depth that they have on their team. And he's right. You couldn't go out and block some of the good players, the good young players that you had, but you also needed to find ways to deal with the fact that you would have injuries and you don't know whether or not some of those players were going to be successful, right? Like Jared Kelnick has not been this year. So good stuff from Jerry, and I like the conversation there about Kelnick and just needing to go have fun and relax. And it's funny, he doesn't really give him, he said they weren't giving him any specific instructions, but when we ask him, hey, what's it going to do to bring him back? Well, he says it's not performance based, but it is, right? Because he says it is performance based, but not to the eye of the fan in the stands. We're going to be looking at X, Y, and Z. So there still are some things, obviously, that they want Jared to work on while he's down there. All right. That was Jerry DePoto. Good stuff. If you missed any of it, definitely worth the listen. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts, for sure, at seattlesports.com as well. Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher are apparently having a legitimate war. So Saban, I guess, started this by saying things are changing and they can't get all the good players because Texas A&M is paying them all. And I don't know whether he was suggesting that anything illegal was going on, but just that with the name, image, and likeness stuff, Texas A&M spending a bunch of money in that part of it. And so, all right, that's Nick's comment. Well, Jimbo Fisher, who you may remember, worked for Nick Saban when they were at LSU together a few years ago, like 15 years ago, was not having it at all. So he calls a press conference, and he has been going off on Nick Saban and saying the quiet part out loud, so to speak. Here's a little of Jimbo Fisher attacking his old boss.
First of all, I'll say it's a shame that we have to do this. It's really despicable. It's despicable that somebody can say things about somebody and an organ. More importantly, 17-year-old kids. You're taking shots at 17-year-old kids and their families. And they broke state laws. They're all money. We bought every player on this group. We never bought anybody. No rules were broken. Nothing was done wrong. It was all in the way we do things, the ethics in which we do things. And these families, it's despicable that a reputable head coach could come out and say this when he doesn't get his way or things don't go his way. The narcissist in him doesn't allow those things to happen, and it's ridiculous.
You can hear him shaking.
Oh, yeah, he's so mad. But is that what Saban's saying? I mean, I just read some of the quotes. I mean, Saban says, we were second in recruiting last year. A&M was first. A&M bought every player on their team, made a deal for name, image, and likeness. We didn't buy one player. And then it kind of goes on. But, like, is he saying that A&M is cheating? Or is he just saying, you know, they're spending money in the name, image, and likeness stuff? By the way, he's not the only one. Lane Kiffin a couple of weeks ago said Texas A&M was going to incur a luxury tax on how much they paid for their signing class. So, I mean, like, this is not like Nick Saban by himself. I know that Jimbo went on and called him a egomaniac and all of that. I mean, okay, and maybe some of that stuff is true. I'm not saying he's wrong, but I'm not sure. It feels like
a
bit of an overreaction.
Any of these guys that coach at any of these big schools to act like they have clean hands.
Right. Right. Like, where do you get off, right?
Like, he did discuss a little bit of, like, the parity in college football.
Okay.
So here, check this out.
And the parity in college football he's been talking about, go talk to coaches who coach for him. You'll find out all the parity. Go dig into wherever he's been. You can find out anything. And it's a shame that you got to sit here and defend 17-year-old kids and families and Texas A&M because we do things right. We're always going to do things right. But we're always going to be here.
So it sounds like he believes that maybe Saban isn't always doing things right.
No kidding. Does anybody not think that? Of course he's not always doing everything right.
No, but
right.
I don't think you are either, Jimbo. And
no
I also
kidding.
Don't think Nick Saban was calling out 17-year-old kids.
I don't think he was doing that at all. Like, not even a little bit. Now, maybe there's other parts to Saban's quotes that I haven't read yet. But at least in terms of what I've read, this feels like methinks the lady doth protest too much, right? Isn't that Shakespeare? Methinks Jimbo doth protest too much. Like, calm down, man. This feels like an extreme overreaction. And look, maybe this is all just for show. This does sort of feel like, you know, WWE, where you just kind of go back and forth and you build up the rivalry and you make kids want to choose one side or the other. And it's all just sort of a recruiting ploy or whatever. And maybe that's all it is. But other, if it's not that, like, I'm not sure I understand his level of frustration here, and I'm sure it's probably more personal. Well,
exactly,
than
as you
else.
Said, it's got to be so much more personal.
I'm sure, right? I mean, and these guys recruit against each other; they're constantly stealing kids from each other, and you know that's life in the SEC. That's life in big time college football, and now even more challenge with the name, image, and likeness stuff, and how that's changing the game. So, all right, good. I'm not attacking 17-year-old kids at all. In fact, they seem to be the only winners in this situation. They're the ones who are actually getting that money, which is probably where it belongs. So we'll tell you everything you need to know. I might give you another update from the PGA Championship if I'm not feeling too depressed. It's all still to come. It is the Mike Salk Show in Seattle Sports on 710.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Yeah, the Mariners have found themselves in a whole bunch of situations that feel must win, even despite the early date on the calendar. And kind of like the way they were in New York, they found a way with their backs against the wall to make it happen. This time, salvaged a game in Toronto. And when your back's against the wall, that's exactly when Marco Gonzalez shines. He was excellent. Threw six innings of one-run ball yesterday, gave his team a chance to win. We all know, though, that hasn't always been enough recently. And thankfully, Ty France and some others provided some of the offense that was needed.
Ty France, first pitch, swung on, drive deep to left center field. That thing got carry. It is gone. A two-run rocket by Ty France, and the Mariners have a 4-1 lead. Jumped on the first pitch, a high fastball. Got it into the front row, left center field.
Yeah, home runs for Cal Raleigh and Abraham Toro as well. Mariners win it 5-1 against Kevin Gausman, who has been one of the best in baseball this year. So, yeah, Mariners in the last week have beaten Scherzer and Gausman, but lost to Kikuchi and a struggling Barrios. So you go figure all that out. Talked to Jerry DePoto a few minutes ago. He gave us some updates, including the fact that Kyle Lewis, he's hoping, is feeling closer. Thought it was a big deal that he was able to play in back-to-back games yesterday, and on Monday his rehab stint ends, so they'll make some sort of a decision on his future at that point. He also gave us an update on Jared Kelnick, why he was sent down, and what it'll take for him to come back.
Yeah, I think too many people too quickly are writing Jared off. This is an opportunity for him to go find himself a little bit and in a little less stressful in an environment to perform. That's all.
Yeah, it says that there are opportunities for him to relax, to have a little bit more fun playing, and even mentioned some players that have combined Jared's level of intensity but learned how to channel it. Guys like Bryce Harper, guys like Albert Bell, guys like Eddie Murray, and there are probably lots of others as well. So, yeah, the idea of Jared Kelnick succeeding is still, I think, very, very crucial to the long-term success of the Mariners, and by no means is it something that I would be writing off. They head to Boston now for 4. Red Sox limping in. They're just 15-22 on the season, although they did just take 3 out of 4 in Houston. We'll see George Kirby and Rich Hill get it started this afternoon.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Yeah, crazy day in college football. Let's start in the Pac-12. The league decided that the teams with the 2 top winning percentages are going to face each other in the championship game, scrapping their old formula where the division winners battled. So no more of that. Instead, according to George Klivkov in a news release, he said, "Our goal is to place our 2 best teams in our Pac-12 football championship game, which we believe will provide our conference with the best opportunity to optimize college football playoff invitations and ultimately win national championships." So what is he saying? Basically, USC wanted us to put this in there so that they would have a better win on their schedule at the end of the year, because I think that's the way this conference is going to be for a little while. With the money that USC and maybe Oregon have and are prepared to spend in the name, image, and likeness world, I just think they have a massive advantage over the other schools in the conference. And my expectation is with Lincoln Riley there that you're going to see a little run here that USC goes on, similar to what Pete Carroll did while he was there. And you're seeing this play its way out throughout the college football landscape. Nick Saban had taken some shots at Texas A&M's draft class, or recruiting class rather, saying that they had essentially bought all of those players. And today we heard a response from head coach Jimbo Fisher, who went off in talking about Nick Saban, called him arrogant, and said that that the allegations were untrue, told people to dig into his background and that all sorts of stuff will come out, that people treat him like he walks on water when he does not. So, yeah, things are definitely getting interesting in college football.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
All right, blowout last night in game 1 of the NBA. This time Golden State taking it to Dallas. 25-point victory, never really in doubt. So both the Heat and the Warriors have blown out their opponents in game 1. We'll see if that trend continues. In the NHL, we saw 2 really interesting games. First, Ian Cole, game winner in overtime for Carolina. And then later, offensive explosion in what is a fierce battle between the Flames and Edmonton, 2 teams in Alberta. Flames led 3-0. And they led 6-2. And that's when the Oilers came storming back, scored 4 straight to make it 6-6. Flames then scored 3 more goals, 9-6, your final. Matthew Tkachuk putting the finishing touches on the game and his own night.
To the Oiler bench, so the extra attacker back on. The net is empty, and it's empty for Tkachuk.
Yeah, he put him away with a hat trick. Hats all over the ice, but not his dad, the great Keith Tkachuk, caught on video saying, "No, I'm not throwing my hat out on the ice. Forget that." Do you want a PGA update, or should we just skip that? We don't need to keep talking about that, do we? Aren't we pretty much done? No?
You're done watching?
Yeah. No, I'm just totally done. Jordan's 2 over after 9. That's okay. All we need to know about.
Womp.
I know. No, Rory McIlroy leading the pack right now. He is 4 under. A couple other guys at 3 and 2 under as well. So that's your PGA Championship update. I'll get back to it. I'll be watching it all day, I promise.
Rewatching some of the highlights of last night's game, and Mr. Unsexy himself, Marco.
Yes.
That walked run in really was a pretty good pitch. Like, that was a strike. That shouldn't have been a walk in. So it makes his day look one small blemish worse than what it was actually a very, very good start for him.
I thought he was excellent. I thought Jerry kind of summed it up really well in talking about him. Like, yeah, he's sexy to me because all he does is go out there and pitch, and he may not be blowing 99, and he may not look like Randy Johnson, but again, just sort of that grinding through a really good lineup, that's kind of exactly what Marco did last night. He grinds his way through. He doesn't overpower anybody, and I think that's all anyone's saying when they say he's not sexy or this and that, and I'm sure it's frustrating for him to hear that stuff over and over again, but that's all they're saying, right? Is just that, yeah, all right, it's not you're not overpowering people with that stuff that people believe is sort of the modern holy grail, right? Guys throwing 99 right. miles an hour with a nasty slider. He doesn't have that. But he mixes things up. He's a smart pitcher. He changes speeds. He keeps it off the barrel of the bat. He finds a way to keep good hitters off balance and use some of their strengths against them. He's like I don't know enough about various forms of wrestling, but like a judo wrestler or something like that, right? Somebody who can kind of use your aggressiveness against you. I think he does a really good. You used to wrestle, right, Justin?
Yeah,
that in wrestling,
all Greco-Roman wrestling. Yeah, that, I mean that's some of the
is
best,
that what you
the best
did?
Wrestlers was Greco-Roman.
Yeah,
yeah.
You and what was the guy's name who was like the great you? Rulon Gardner.
Oh, Rulon Gardner. We had posters of him in the wrestling.
I bet you did. He was like the first U.S. guy ever to medal in Greco-Roman wrestling.
Yeah, Montana. That was wrestling and football were the kings of everything.
And so you did Greco-Roman?
I never did freestyle wrestling. That wasn't my thing.
Okay.
Scoring was different. But yeah, you're right. It was about leverage. And I mean, obviously, you're wrestling in your weight class, so it's not like you're going to be going up against somebody that much bigger than you.
Mm-hmm.
But the best guys were able to use your weight and your momentum and everything against you. But what, I was the long, goofy, spider-legged kid.
What is Greco-Roman wrestling? How is it different?
Just scoring was different. It was like freestyle wrestling, you can throw. Greco, you couldn't. I don't know, there's probably a lot more of it that I just didn't pick up on as a kid because it's the only thing I knew. Like we didn't have other styles that we could really go with.
Got it.
But the freestyle tournaments that was not my style.
That wasn't your deal.
No, wasn't good at freestyle wrestling.
All right, we will do a little bit of ranking coming up here in 20 minutes right after we talk to Brock. If you're a hardcore football fan and you really like kind of an inside breakdown of X's and O's and what the Seahawks are going to do on defense, I think you'll want to stick around and listen to Brock. It's next. Mike Salk Show here on Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
Brock and Salk.
With my brains and your brawn, we'll make an excellent team.
Every morning at 7:45 and 9:30, presented by Top Fitness Store on the Mike Salk Show.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive new episodes of the Brock and Salk podcast at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Good morning, Brock.
Well, good morning, Michael.
How are we doing today?
I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah, pretty good today. Are you enjoying the PGA?
I am. Yeah.
Nice. Good start.
I got it on. I got Tiger and Rory and Jordan all on there together.
Not a bad crew.
It's not bad. It is crazy. I was saying earlier how things have changed for Tiger, right? He used to be the longest guy on tour when he first came up and used that to his advantage. And now he's 25, 35 yards behind the other two guys.
Yes. Yeah. And that's probably not going to change.
No, of course not at his age. But, I mean, he looks better physically. He's moving better. Yeah, watching it this morning, he does look pretty darn good. Hey, can you help do some Clint Hurt translating? Would you mind kind of throwing that?
Okay, I'll do my best.
Take that club out of the bag and help us out. So let me run you through three or four of these cuts on Clint Hurt. So let me start with the one on the 3-4 defense. He explains what the 3-4 defense does and what it allows them to do differently from when they were in a 4-3.
And obviously in today's game, everything is all about how you affect the quarterback, not only by pressuring and hitting and sacking him, but also screwing with his reads pre-snap and post-snap, you know, and the things you can do with that. And what 3-4 allows you to do is you can be balanced and be able to play out of too high shell and be able to cover down with your edge guys and whatnot when necessary. So anything that you can do to make the quarterback have to work, and I believe it's more than half the teams in the NFL right now are playing 3-4 defenses. So that's where the league is trending, and it's not a surprise. You look at all the quarterbacks that's coming in the league right now and all the RPO stuff that's across the league, it's something that you got to have.
What's he saying?
Okay, so if you just like look at your board, right? If you were to draw just on a sheet of paper, like a four down front, so you immediately have four big defensive linemen. Now, Pete has always enjoyed his Leo and his guy that can really rush and and have that kind of dynamic ability. Now, take one of those defensive linemen off, and you obviously have three D linemen. Now you have four linebackers. And with that, what he's talking about is just from a front standpoint, you have more flexibility to mess with that QB, more flexibility, most importantly, to mess with the protections of those offensive line, right? I mean, it was one of the challenges that the Peyton had, one of the few in the NFL, was when we ever played Baltimore and Rex Ryan scheme of just trying to identify. If there's four down, you'd always hear Peyton say, okay, four down, and there's the Mike linebacker. Let's identify that, and that sets the protection for everything else. All of a sudden, you have three down, and maybe one of them doesn't even have their hand on the ground to try to identify, man, where is my four down lineman? I need to help my offensive line with this math so they can set their protection so you can give me an opportunity to throw it, is what Clint Hurt is saying. Now, with a three down front, maybe in nickel situations, passing situations, being able to mix and match some of those things, we just screw with the numbers. We screw with the protection, and then hopefully, Mike, screw with the mind of that quarterback just a little bit to wonder whether he's protected on one side or the other.
So it's essentially getting more athletes on the field.
Yes.
Right? I mean, yes. That sounds like what you're saying is more guys who can do multiple things and are more versatile. It's not unlike, and I remember you teaching me about this however many years ago, the advantages of the modern two tight end system, right? Where the just guys who have versatility can mess with what you want to do on defense or in this
case on
offense.
I know he said to you, yep, and I know he said to you yesterday, hey, that, you know, playing defense is reactionary. And we talked about this at length in the podcast yesterday. You're reacting to the personnel groups on the field. You're reacting to their formations. You do have to react. But what this does, and what he's saying there with the 3-4, is that gives us an opportunity to have that O-line and the protection schemes and the QB react to more of our fronts rather than just being stagnant, rather than them easily being able to identify what we're doing. We're going to make that picture a little bit cloudier right up front.
All right, so then let me play you this one, because this is what he's talking about in the secondary. It's the first of these, more on how the defense changes in this new version that he's running.
You have two different principles when you play zone coverage in this league. Some teams are spot drops where you really focus on hitting landmarks. And, you know, and you, once you get to your depth, you get your vision on the quarterback and you're melting and moving off the eyes of the quarterback and reading his shoulders and whatnot, where he's going with the football. And then you got to break and react on the ball. You know, and the other side you can play is more of a zone matchup principle, where you're really playing bodies and pattern matching more so than playing in an area. So are you playing a man or are you playing the area? There's a difference. So you have either zone match or you have spot drop vision and break. We've been a vision and break defense here for a really long time. And we'll have some of those principles in certain calls that'll stay alive. But the big thing right now is obviously the ability to pattern match, and you got to be able to react to the stems of receivers and whatnot and match up with people.
Spot drop, vision, and break.
Yep, spot drop is what the Seahawks were when Pete came here. Cover three team, mix a little cover one man, and we kind of mess with you in that way. Can you tell if this is man or zone? And we're going to screw with you that way. But when we play zone, we are spot dropping. We are getting to these landmarks. You're going to get to this landmark on the curl flat, on the hook zone. You're going to get to this landmark, Earl. You're going to be deeper than the deepest, so you can run red line to red line.
And what's the advantage of that? Because now, obviously,
the advantage of that
change.
Is what he said. Yep, the advantage is what he said right there. You get eyes on the quarterback. Bobby, you drop into this hook zone and you get to that landmark, and immediately you get your eyes on the quarterback. So what that should do is create more takeaways, because I got my eye on the quarterback. I'm seeing when he's throwing it. I'm breaking on that route, right? If that ball gets tipped, if that ball is you know, bounced off the receiver's hands, I have eyes on it. It should help my takeaways, but we have not seen that for the last 3 or 4 years. Right, that has been, we saw it the first few years with the Seahawks and with their length and with their athleticism and their unique athletes and so many of those spot drops, Mike. We haven't seen that the last 4 or 5 years. So now we're going to play more of, in basketball, a matchup zone. We're not going to just play this 2-3 zone, right? Okay, you got this spot. Hey, right in the middle of this 2-3, you've got the lane. Hey, you two on the wings, you're going to just lengthen out to the three-point line, and we're going to just play the spot 2-3 zone. No. Instead, we're going to play a matchup out of it. And if they do this, we're going to collapse into this part of the zone, right, in basketball terms. So I think that's probably easiest if you picture just a basketball zone and those that just line up stagnant when you teach little kids how to run a 2-3 versus the elite matchup 2-3 zones that really do play off what the offense is doing.
What about pattern matching? Can you explain what he means there, that they're going to pattern match?
Yep. So based on formations and tendencies, this team loves to run these patterns from this look. When they get in a 3-by-1, a trip side, okay, these are the routes that they love to do. This is their tendency off of it. So instead of just dropping and spot dropping to our zones, when they get in this formation, we're gonna play zone, right? We're still going to have some of those same principles, but now we're going to react and we're going to match their routes. So our little nickelback, instead of just dropping under, you know, into the zone, hey, here's their tendency. They love to run an in-break off of this. They love the little slant routes off of this. So you can jump that route. You can match their routes. So it's really adding like man-to-man principles within a zone defense, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Which is really, in basketball, when you're playing a 2-3 matchup, you're really playing like, okay, we're playing a 2-3 zone, but we're matching up with man principles, very similar to pattern reading, match reading in football.
You like it?
Oh, it has to happen. And this is what I've screamed for. This is what Heaps has screamed for. It's what I've lost my mind over. Right when Matt Schaub, as we talked about, threw for 465 yards because you just spot dropped and you gave him so many gimmies. Not only 465 yards, he was like 78%. Well, we won that game. Yeah, you did, but you didn't take it away. You didn't dictate. You didn't do anything. That guy couldn't move. That guy had very average arm strength. He was you know, decrepit at that stage of his career, and you made him look good. And if you're a spot zone team, you can do that, and you've done that over the years. You play some matchup now, you get in a 3-4, you move things around, you make Max Schaub think. Guess what? Here's a pick six. Here's a sack fumble. Here's impact plays defensively that have not been there for the last 3 years under the old system. You're trying to make an impact. You're trying to make an imprint, and both with his charisma and his energy, and I think with the horsepower from their scheme, with a number of their coaches defensively, you're going to see more impact. You have to see more impact plays defensively.
How much better could their defense be in 2020, this upcoming season, than last year? Just based on those changes and you know, a couple personnel moves.
Well, they are going to be, you know, they're going to be maybe statistically, Mike, they're going to give up some yards and some plays and everything else, and they're going to lose some games and whatever. So how you gauge that, how much better can they be? I know this gives you an opportunity to be on the offensive. This gives you an opportunity to be playmaking. This gives you an opportunity, and I know you talked to Bobby Wagner after the season and had a pretty extended conversation with him, and this gives you an opportunity to cut your guys loose. To be more aggressive, which a lot of them have clamored for. Now, to do those things in coverage, you got to have great athleticism. You got to have great instincts, right? I don't know about their corners, right? They love Trey Brown. Dave Wyman loves Trey Brown. You drafted corner, right? Was a couple of them, right? You're going to probably have a rookie play and Kobe Bryant, but there's going to be a learning curve to this. So,
And I would think it puts a lot of pressure on, especially your free safety, not to get beat deep. Right. I mean, if everybody's matching up and they're not deeper than he better make sure he's not getting beat, or Pete's not going to have that.
No. And Quandre is pretty good at that. He's pretty savvy. This plays right to his strengths. It's going to be a little more challenging for Jamal. Jamal in coverage, not his greatest strength, but, you know, is he around that box a little bit more?
But yes, they know that. And
they do.
And listening to Clint, I mean, he said, hey, we're going to focus on getting him into his great spots and the underneath coverage and all the things that he does. So, Brock, good stuff. It's kind of fun to talk about. I love some of the deep X's and O's stuff. Whew. And Clint's great, man. I got to tell you, I was a little biased because he was in the building. Right. And I think that kind of made me hope they would go in another direction. But man, he is bringing just a completely different attitude and scheme and everything else to the table. I think it's pretty cool.
Bias or biased?
I was biased.
Okay.
Yes. There's an ED at the end of that.
Appreciate it.
Goodbye, buddy. We'll talk later. Every morning, Brock Heward, 7:45 and 9:30, and some good hardcore football talk there with Brock. We'll do some ranking here in a couple of minutes. Fun conversation with Jerry DePoto today. I liked his answer on Marco Gonzalez and said, he's sexy to me because he goes out there and wins games, and we absolutely need him to. I don't know if you've caught any of this, but Marco kind of
bristled perhaps at the idea that he's not sexy. Both his catcher, Cal Raleigh, and his manager, Scott Service, yesterday mentioned that he was not sexy. So we have a little sound from Marco, I think, here. Here is, I want to play you Marco Gonzalez responding to allegations that he is not sexy.
I mean, I guess you said it. I'm not sexy, but I'm still here.
The hair is, you know.
But I'm still here, and I'm still getting dudes out. So I don't know what to tell you. If you don't think I can pitch this level, then I love it because I'm gonna keep proving you wrong. I've done it my entire career.
Marco may not be sexy, but both Mora, you and Justin, both had comps for him that I thought were pretty darn accurate.
Yeah, it's like he's the Toyota Camry of the team. Like he's because Mora brought up somebody else that I think
well,
yeah,
I
probably
asked
say
if he was
first.
The Tyler Lockett of the Mariners,
meaning he gets overlooked a lot.
Yeah, like especially nationally, I don't think many people know who he is. And then I think he's been pretty reliable for them the last few seasons. But mm-hmm. he just there's always someone like newer, flashier, better that you're like
bigger.
Yeah, Marco's still here, but Robbie Ray's here now. Or
right. Bigger, taller, faster in Tyler Lockett's case, right?
Yeah. And I mean, I think we all love Tyler here, but I do think he gets overlooked as in the NFL as a whole.
Uh-huh. The Justin Toyota Camry?
Yeah, yeah. To Mora's point, it's like not the muscle-bound freak that puts up like jaw-dropping numbers. Like just good, resilient, reliable, consistent. I mean, of course, a few errors here and there, but like that's a Toyota Camry. Not a head turner. You still walk away unimpressed, but you're like, man, the handling and value is this is bang for your buck. This is a really good choice.
It's funny. I'm right there with you on both of those. I think those both make sense because of sort of the lack of kind of name brand recognition or those fancy features that everybody seems to go gaga for, but just absolutely getting the job done.
Mm-hmm.
I throw another name out there, and that's Doug Baldwin, who I think has some similarities in the Tyler Lockett stuff, didn't always get the national respect, etc. But I think what Marco and Doug have that I don't know if you get from Tyler or a Toyota Camry is a feistiness. He's feisty.
Doug, yeah, he did. Yeah.
Right? I mean, like, Doug was obviously feisty, and I would say Marco is feisty in a good way. Again, not an insult at all. And sexy, yes, please. Pump the right side, Fred. And I am too sexy. Imagine being so sexy, it hurts.
Or wait, we have another one. He could also be our boy Justin Timberlake.
Oh, that'd be good. Let's hear that. I'm bringing sexy back. Ah, there you go. Yes.
Bringing that 84 to 88 mile an hour sexy back.
A little cutter in on your hand, sexy back.
Yeah.
A little miss in the barrel, but allowing soft contact, sexy back. Yeah.
Getting out.
He's feisty, though. I mean, you can hear it. He's cutting off Div. Div is trying to make a joke. Like, oh, no, it's your hair. He's like, yeah, whatever, dude. And I'm going to make a, like, I'm mad. And I'm going to talk about it. Nobody thinks I'm sexy and I'm boring and this and that. And good on him. He uses every
bit of
that.
You don't think I should be here too bad. Here I am.
Exactly. I love it. I love the feistiness. And there is a little Doug Baldwin in there, probably more than anyone else. All right, let's do some ranking.
Got a list? Time to put it in order.
Fred Dwarmfor's house. Top five meals that I have ever had.
This is Ranked.
To be honest, that list was really biased.
Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen. Every morning at 9:45 on the Mike Salk Show.
That top 10 list. I'm not buying that.
Ranked.
All right, one of the fun things to do in Ranked is to see which ones we miss. So I'm kind of curious which ones the texters will realize that we didn't come up with.
Can
today,
I just
206.
Tell the texters what I wanted to do versus what you chose?
No, absolutely not. This is, sure, yes. Of course you can.
Because we were playing Right Said Fred, I wanted to do 90s one-hit wonders.
Yes.
You said there were too many options.
Too many.
Because you like to do weird, obscure ones. So what are we doing instead?
Well, today, as you may or may not know, Mora, Justin told me, is the anniversary of the discovery of the pneumatic hammer.
The discovery. Yes, we just stumbled upon the discovery. Right,
maybe the invention of the pneumatic hammer.
The pneumatic hammer. 1892. I'm surprised you didn't have this date circled weeks
1892.
ago.
1892.
Yeah. Charles Brady King, you know.
Call him CBK.
Our favorite hammer inventor.
Yes.
The pneumatic hammer is on this day in 1892.
Okay. Well, with that in mind... Hammers ranked. Hammers ranked.
I'm on the edge of my seat.
Now, there's a lot of very good hammers that didn't make this list, as you would imagine. It was a crowded field.
Yes.
Hammer toes, obviously, discounted immediately for being kind of gross.
Yeah, that's out.
Hammer fist. What is that again?
Oh, the UFC. Like, well, and I guess that's mostly only UFC, right? Is hammer fist when you ball your fist up and you're using your arm like a hammer on somebody's
Ooh.
Face.
So you're hammer almost fist. Hitting with like the bottom of
yeah.
your hand. I see.
Yeah.
yeah.
Man, those, okay. whenever they, the hammer fists come out, you know you're in big trouble.
You got the ball peen hammer. You got the jackhammer. You got the hammerhead shark, which is sort of what Brock looks like. Eyes way too far apart. He'll tell you that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You're just taking a random shot?
No, that's Brock's line. I okay. just stole it from him.
The
hammerhead He's the one
shark.
Who always says he's like a hammerhead shark.
Awesome. And kind of sad, but okay.
Yeah. So with all of that being said, oh, you got the curling hammer, right?
Oh,
the last one in
on.
Herbert when you
How
have
could
the
you
curling
forget?
Hammer.
You're supposed to be an aficionado.
I am. That's why I just thought of the curling hammer.
No, someone texted it.
All right, that too. But he reminded me of what I was already thinking of. All right, number five, and this one's for our friend Taylor Jacobs, who's a huge fan of the Marvel movies, Thor's hammer.
Very, very interesting theory. I have a simpler one. You're all not worthy.
Of course, from the famous scene where nobody can pick up the hammer, except Thor.
He's the, oh, it's like King
Arthur's
sword.
Yeah,
Excalibur.
Thor's hammer, though, it's pretty famous.
Very famous hammer. Dwight's number five on the list. Now, number four. This one's interesting because the nickname has been given to multiple people, but I think it started with Hank Greenberg. He was the Hebrew hammer. And then I think over time, like any decent Jewish baseball player had a little bit of pop. Sean Green became the Hebrew hammer. Ryan Braun became the Hebrew hammer. Somehow I think Gabe Kapler and Kevin Youkilis missed out on being the Hebrew hammers, maybe because they were on the same team. But uh-huh. if you were like a Jewish baseball player with a little bit of pop, you get to be the Hebrew hammer.
Okay. I'm wasn't there a Hebrew hammer in the Adam Carolla movie, The Hammer?
I think it's called the, yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I've never seen that.
That's pretty good. It's
yeah,
a low-budget movie.
Yeah. Anyway, the Hebrew hammer, number four.
Okay. The Hebrew
now,
hammer.
Now, number three, Moore, what was the question you asked me? If I had ever used what?
Oh, well, because I knew it made the list. I said, how often do you... is this on the list because you use it quite frequently?
A sledgehammer? No. It's on the list because of this. Be a sledgehammer.
Great
Peter
song.
Gabriel. Sledgehammer. Number three on our
never
list.
Never heard it.
You never heard Sledgehammer by Peter Gabriel? Wow.
I think so.
That and, Big Time came out around the same time and sound very, very similar. After Peter Gabriel left Genesis, that was one of the songs he did.
Shock Your Monkey, that was on just a few days ago,
It's
right?
been a big Peter Gabriel week, obviously, yeah. We'll see if we could get Salisbury Hill onto the show maybe tomorrow, if possible.
Yeah, sure. Or, you know, I Can't Dance, or...
Biko?
Have
you heard Biko?
Don't Give Up. I don't know if I know Biko. I probably wouldn't have heard
Stephen
it.
Biko, the civil rights leader.
And once I heard it.
You might know it. All right, so number three on our list of all-time hammers, Sledgehammer. Now, I did think, and this is a very obscure reference, I don't know if any texter out there, you would have to be about my age, in mid-40s, to know this. There was a show in the 80s called Sledgehammer, I think it was on ABC, about like a wild cop who was always, you know, breaking the rules, and his name was Sledgehammer, and before he did anything he would go, trust me, I know what I'm doing, and then he'd screw whatever it is up. It's so stupid.
It's a deep reference.
It's a really, really deep reference, and I think it was on like opposite the Cosby Show or something that like all of America watched, so nobody ever watched this show, but I loved it. I thought it was like the great. I was like, you know, nine. I thought it was like the greatest thing.
It's like that's about as deep of reference as my Eugenio Suarez looks like Joey from the Dennis the Menace remake of the 90s.
We got a texter here said Sledgehammer. The show was awesome.
All right,
the guy's name was like Peter or something. I don't know. He wasn't in much else. I don't.
Tyler and Pocatello with the Hammer Brothers from the Mario Brothers.
Oh yeah, they did some hammering. Yeah. Okay. Well, number two on this list, Maura, almost could have been on your list with one-hit wonders from the 90s, but I think you would say he had two or three hits, so unfortunately, no room for MC Hammer.
My music hit me so hard, makes me say, oh my Lord, thank you for blessing me. What a mind to run and to hype me, it feels good when you know you're down. A super dope homeboy from the Oaktown, and I'm known as such. And
if it wasn't for Too Legit to Quit, he could have made the one-hit wonder list.
I know. Yeah. Can't touch this. He's sort of a two-hit wonder. Now, he had something else. He had the Addams Family song, too.
Oh, he did.
I don't remember that.
We do what we want to do, say what we want to say. It's not good. The Addams Family. Yeah.
It's all good. Here comes the hammer. Well, oh, I have not looked at these song titles from MC Hammer since I stole my sister's CD.
This was called Here Comes the Hammer?
Here Comes the Hammer. That was on the 1990 album. Please Hammer, Don't Hurt Him.
That was his big album, right?
Yep.
Please Hammer, Don't Hurt Him.
And Adam's Groove was the one I think you're thinking of from the
album. And I guess you could put Hammer Pants on this list because they're sort of named for him,
mm-hmm.
right? MC Hammer wore Hammer Pants.
What was Russell's injury? Was it Hammer?
That was a mallet finger.
Mallet. Okay. Yeah. Great Hammer, though.
Right. Yeah, mallet's
versatile
good.
Hammer.
Very. Yes. Yes. I'm not sure how it differs from a hammer, but I agree it's versatile.
Okay.
The number one Hammer, I would say, is Hammer and Hank Aaron. When you set the all-time record for home runs, you get to be number one on this list.
Fastball is a high drive into deep left center field. Buckner goes back to the fence. It is gone.
The greatest.
It's pretty good.
Hammer and Hank.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Hank Aaron going to be number one on our list of all-time hammers. All right, we got to get out of here. Thanks to Jerry DePoto, Michael Bumpus, Brock Heward, everyone. They were great today. You can go find all that stuff on the podcast page, wherever you get your podcasts. Jeff Passan tomorrow, G. Scott tomorrow. Should be a fun day, and we'll see how the Mariners do in Boston. So a lot to get to. Talk to you at 6 o'clock. Goodbye.